Listener-supported St. Gabriel Catholic Radio AM 820 brings you Answering the Call, offering a glimpse into the spiritual journeys of local priests, deacons, and religious. And now, Answering the Call with Elizabeth Ficicelli.
Hello, thanks for joining us today on Answering the Call here on St. Gabriel Catholic Radio AM 820, streaming live on stgabrielradio.com, and I'm your host, Elizabeth Ficicelli. It's always a delight to have someone on the program who's been serving in his vocation for many years. And joining me today is Father Homer Bluebaugh. He's a priest of 46 years who describes his status as semi-retired mobile. And mobile is a good word for him because he sounds like he's just as active as ever. Thanks, Father Bluebaugh, for being with us on Answering the Call today.
You're most welcome. I'm glad to be here.
I'm so glad that we were able to fit in your busy schedule. I'm so glad. And so we always go back kind of to the beginning, Father, and you grew up in Danville, Ohio. It's where you've always considered home. You're there again now. And I'd say quite a colorful upbringing. Tell us about the Bluebaugh family down on the farm.
Well, we have lived in this area for over 200 years.
Wow.
And within a mile of the original place. And growing up as a young person on a farm, you see all these things around you. And then when you get a little bit older, you're going to be doing those things, like milking cows, taking care of chickens, and various things as you get older, operating a tractor, and doing your share of the general farm, from grain to livestock to baling hay to other things on the farm. So there's a lot of variety, and you learn, and then you teach the younger ones. So it's a progressive thing.
Big family, big Bluebaugh family.
Yes, 10 of us.
10 kids. And your parents, Catholic?
Yes, both of them were from large families. So they grew up in the country, and they wanted to raise us in the country so we would be not tainted by the city so much as living, you know, a nice life in the country.
And since the Bluebaughs have roots that you say 200 years, so you probably had a lot of relatives. You're probably related to everybody in the town of Danville, huh?
Yes, 90%+.
Wow. So you kind of grew up in this very big farming family, Catholic family. So Mass on Sundays,
oh,
that kind of
always.
Thing?
Always. Never a doubt. There, we watched the clock. We were there. We sat in a certain pew when I was very young, and we were, it was just part of life. You never thought about not being there.
You took up a whole pew, I bet, too.
Yes. And
if the Bluebaugh family wasn't there, it was going to be pretty obvious, so you had to go there. But and you went to a local public school because the busy farm schedule would be hard for you to have to take a bus way to the nearest Catholic school. So who prepared you for the sacraments?
Well, we had visiting sisters from Vernon, Sisters of Charity of Nazareth, Kentucky, and they would come on Saturday afternoons for the elementary and junior high level. And so we had wonderful teaching for all the grades from beginning through junior high. And then high school was the local pastor was the high school instructor on Sunday evening. So that was a must for all of us. There was it was very enjoyable. It was we were there and rarely would ever miss. So it was a great preparation.
Now, it was in high school, perhaps, that you began thinking about the priesthood. So help to fill in the gaps here. What was happening in your heart and your mind that you felt quietly attracted to this particular vocation?
Well, I, through high school, always thought about college. I wasn't sure what. I thought about medicine a lot. In the process, I had all the Latin courses were available and a year of Spanish. And during my junior year, I was looking at maybe after my graduation from Danville to go to Wade Seminary. And so I never told anybody but Dad in my junior year in the spring. And he said, well, we want you to go your high school year to St. Charles, not wait after you graduate. So that was the big step.
Was he surprised, though? Like,
not really surprised. I just had never said it. It might have been his wish and prayer. We had five Durban priests from St. Luke's Danville over many years, and they were neighbors, relation, and people that were well known. Most of them were living at this time by my high school, so they were somebody very much in their background.
So you were used to these priests coming over. You kind of had friendships with them?
Well, the pastors visited our house different times and not recruiting me, but just making visits. And they would drop in, and we had wonderful conversations, and they were part of our life. And there was one medical issue when I was very young. The advice of the local pastor was very well cherished and always sought after. And so our family always felt very close to whoever the local pastor was when that time. So there was always a wonderful rapport.
So when these priests were looking at these 10 blue ball children, you know, do you think they're saying that homer, that's the one, that's the one is going to become?
It was never said directly to me. They may have said out of this group, because we were quiet little farm kids. We were not, you know, very demonstrative about anything. We just listened and watched and listened and learned. And that was what we were.
And so you decided to tell your dad one day, mm-hmm. what you're just like milking the cows, and you just kind of right. said, hey, by the way, Dad.
Exactly.
You know? Okay. So, and it sounds like he was supportive. Mom was supportive.
Yes, exactly.
And your dad's game plan then was to suggest that you have a senior year in a Catholic environment, since you had not been going to Catholic school.
Correct. And he thought that would be a good entree to, if college is what I wanted to do, seminary is what I wanted to do. He had a better idea of my future than I did in that sense, because it was a great sacrifice for me to leave at the end of my junior year, when my older brother was leaving to go into service the same month of August. And so the younger brothers took over our milking 33 cows morning or evening every day, and things kept going just wonderful.
But yeah, and that must have been a huge sacrifice for him. You had two sons leaving at the same time, and especially the one who's talking about the priesthood means he may not come back and run this farm, as I'm sure your dad might have been right. looking forward to having someone take this job over. So you were going to be going to St. Charles High School.
Correct.
That's where you'd go to senior year. Were your classmates surprised when you kind of told them, I won't be here next year?
I didn't tell them until they found out the next year in September that I wasn't there at Danville, but I was someplace else. And I'm sorry I didn't tell them, but I think they kind of knew by hearsay I wasn't coming back. But it was, I don't know what their reaction was. Most of my cousins in the parish probably were very supportive, if I would remember 55 years ago. It certainly was when I came back on vacation or weekends. They were very pleasant, helpful, and very supportive. So they did, but it may not have always been in words.
Mm. And you were actually a boarder there.
Yes.
Because it was too far to commute. And how was the transition for you suddenly living somewhere where you weren't related to everybody?
Well, you had lots of boarding brothers, you know, like maybe about 20 of them. And we all got to know each other very well as family, and everybody was very serious students. We had study hall in common. We had a shared dorm. Meals were wonderful. You were at church every morning, every day of the year when you were there with daily mass early. And it was just a new regimen when you just learned to adjust to it, and you adapt to it, and adapting was not too difficult. It was just that you had plenty of things to do. Your life was very regimented, and we all did well in that kind of a directed environment.
And you were already from that kind of regimented, directed environment, living
yes.
on a farm. You had your chores, you had your responsibilities, like you say, for the younger ones. So it sounds like that you adapted well.
Right.
And at least that year in a Catholic education setting was enough to convince you to at least try.
Correct.
For college. For you back then, it was St. Charles Borromeo College in Columbus for 4 years. How were those 4 years? What was that like?
We all had our little small bedroom study place to study. It was very much centered around our academic life, and we were very much part of chapel programs and being part of the office hours of office. And it was a very, you know, routine that was for our betterment. We had spiritual direction. We had your classes were all very progressive each year. And so each year you kind of feel you are encouraged by the faculty, spiritual directors, that you're doing the best, you're progressing to their expectations, come back next year. So each year you return with renewed hopes and dreams, you completed studies, and you advanced to the next stage. So it was a continuous progression, and you felt there was a built-in sense of accomplishment, and there was a sense of a goal eventually.
Okay, so it was priesthood oriented, definitely, and that was the direction year after year, you know, to see who was really being called to that, as you say. So each year you were progressing.
Yes.
And so the path was becoming very clear. And you would graduate from St. Charles College in 1964, convinced in your calling to enter the seminary. Did you have a choice of a seminary back then, where to go?
Well, the faculty would make a recommendation to the bishop, and that was Bishop Isserman, who visited us in 1964, and he had a visit with all of us. And I think the bishop had very good information on our, who we were, our academic standing, if we went to a standard seminary in Cincinnati or we might go to Washington, D.C. or overseas. And so there were various options the bishop had. And so we just went where we were invited or suggested to go. We didn't really make any input there. It was what they recommended, and we accepted it.
So on one hand, it was good from a standpoint that your classmates were going. So when you got down to Cincinnati, you knew people.
We knew older students already there from three previous years, and so we were the incoming class. But when you're already 21, 22 years old, you're not really a rookie in college. It was another stage of serious study, and it was students all over the state of Ohio, Indiana, and outside those areas. And so we had a wide awareness of the church beyond our immediate
state. So a good blend.
It was a good blend, and it was very informative. You learn a lot from other students, and yet you got a lot of time to study and advance.
We're talking with Father Homer Bluebaugh. He's one of our active retired priests of the diocese, and he's our guest today on Answering the Call here on St. Gabriel Catholic Radio, AM 820. And I'm your host, Elizabeth Ficicelli. So, Father, at the time when you were in priestly formation, it was expected that you would spend a significant time, and this was in those days, at least in the beginning of your priesthood, in teaching. I mean, that was kind of a logical next step when you would become a priest. But back in those days in the seminary, at least there, they didn't have much in place to help you men learn how to be effective high school teachers.
Right.
So talk about that, because you would become involved in a solution to that.
We had a basic course of certification that meant you could teach in high school, but some of us were interested in teaching religion to high school students, where you would not use the lecture technique we had all of our days in high school, in college, because you needed to teach kids a more effective way where they were. So we brought in, the following year, we got this wonderful program started, where those of us who were ordained that those succeeding years would go out prepared, comfortable, organized about teaching high school students where they were in their development, maturity, and offer them and teach content that really was relevant to them. And so it was comforting to know that we didn't go out somewhat fearful of how you approach students and teach them 4 days a week, at least two periods, three periods, different classes. So it was a very serious matter to be a good, effective teacher.
Mm. Well, I think it was a great idea, and it sounds like it was effective.
Yes, it was.
Because you guys came out, were able to teach, and teaching was something that you would certainly do over the next 10 years of your ordination. Since your ordination in 1969, you were primarily at Bishop Reedy High School and at Marian Catholic High School. So once you were out in those classroom environments, did you enjoy teaching?
Well, you really learned to communicate. You know, having enough material for 45, 50 minutes means you have plenty of material, resources. And it wasn't just shooting from the hip. It was offering content and new information. And I remember in one high school, for all these kids' use of awareness of Old and New Testament, they had never opened up the Bible and used it page after page, chapter by chapter in their life. So we all got New Testaments, and we went through the Acts of the Apostles, part of the book of Revelation, and it was enjoyable. They had their own copies, and so it was filling in the gaps, building upon their previous grade school religion classes to something much more profound for the high school. And one school, we designed our own classes each quarter, and so kids came to have something they never heard before in any of their previous years. They were building upon solid grade school Catholic education, but getting it on a high school level, semi-adult level, that we thought was very helpful for them.
And what about beyond academics? How did you like working with the kids just on life issues, on or getting involved with their families, you know, meeting them? Were you able to do some of that, like, yeah, outside the academics?
Well, all of us were kind of tossed into youth group and activities. So those were, apart from sometimes tied in with the schools, sometimes tied in with religious education. I was part of a ski club at Reedy High School. I remember being a youth group of St. Cecilia's and going on canoeing trips. Mm. So we tried to take these youth activities out of beyond the parish level and make very enjoyable experiences out of them. And I get reminded of these once in a while from many years ago by students who haven't ever forgotten.
Yeah. And that kind of, I visualize John Paul II had done that as a young priest, those canoe trips, hiking with the young people and really getting to know them and them getting to know him as a priest. Let's talk about your role as pastor. We kind of talked about your role as teacher. You served first at some rural parishes. You were at Immaculate Conception in Kenton. You were at St. Joseph's in Plain City and Sacred Heart in Coshocton. What stands out most to you from your work in those rural parishes?
Well, all of them were smaller parishes, 300-400 families, and for them, their life was pretty much centered around their town, their local public high school, which all of them had. Only Coshocton had its own Catholic grade school. So you're including children in a Catholic school environment as well as a non-Catholic school environment, and you are responsible for a big part of a county, many of those areas. So your awareness of city families, country families, and anyone in nursing homes and hospitals, that they're all your responsibility. So you're trying to relate to all these people and to take good care of them. So those smaller areas meant even more of a wider geographical area. And so those were very important for me to do and do them well.
Did you have opportunities in those parish environments to be like the priests that you remember growing up, where they would come and spend time with the families and go out on the farms?
In my first parish, as an associate, there were 400 families. And in 3 years, I visited 200 households.
Wow.
So it was always important to visit families. You kind of have aware who lives there, so it's and you it wasn't just an invitation to be there. It was, sometimes it was dropping in, sometimes it was funeral arrangements, so it was an excuse to be a part of that family was there. So it was not any hesitation about going. Sometimes you just say, I'm coming, you know, and so these people, that wasn't that often the other priests visited, you know. So I made it a point to spread this out to a number of families, not just a few, a lot of times.
After those parishes, you were also served at St. Agnes and St. Aloysius, small but urban parishes.
Yes.
Was there a transition in that to go to that environment? Or
they were made up of a lot of families, long time there, who were charter members. And so they had many memories of much larger parish environments and many more parishioners. And so those there until 2012 and those are now have great pride of their accomplishment, the size of their parishes in the past, and keeping these wonderful traditions going. So in a smaller environment, you have a more international mixture, you might say, on the west side of Columbus. And so you are aware of Latino Spanish influence. You're aware of inner city families, and so you try to feel all these families are welcome and address their needs and feel like it's you're taking care of them, whoever and wherever they are.
And a third dimension of your priesthood is chaplaincy. And you've, even within that, you've been pretty diverse. You've served as chaplain at the Ohio State University Hospitals, Cum Christo of Columbus, two different prison systems, and then most recently Back in His Arms Again ministry. So let's talk a little bit about that. The prison ministry, start with that one. You had not envisioned yourself in that line of work?
I just never thought about ever looking or seeking out that. But when Bishop Campbell asked me when I went to St. Agnes in St. Aloysius in 2007. There was an opening at London, Ohio, in the London Correctional Institution. And so I just said, well, yes, I will. You know, you go there and you get an orientation. There's a weekly mass on Wednesday afternoon. There was, among the population of Catholics, you know, 30, 40 who would make themselves known and come to liturgies. So we had a wonderful weekly program and then on Sunday mornings there was a group of lay people from the Columbus Diocese who would go to this London Correctional and have a communion service. They would have Bible study. They had a second program on Sundays, which was really, really commendable, that some inmates could come to who couldn't come Wednesday afternoon because some had jobs and programs. So it was really a very beneficial program for them, and we had probably the most ambitious of any of the Christian programs or church-related programs, what we had in our Catholic program. So the other inmates and staff looked at our program with admiration because we had wonderful liturgies. We sang. We had music people to lead us, and so it was not just a quiet Sunday Mass transferred to Wednesday, but it was a wonderful liturgy to have that was very uplifting for everybody.
I can imagine you probably see a lot of conversions happening.
Yes, we did have converts every year.
Wow. Talk a little bit about the Cum Christo ministry.
Cum Christo continues. I'm going to be on a team next month. In October, and so it is started many years ago in our diocese, in the 60s, and it offers men and women separate weekends of Christian renewal. It can be a rediscovery of faith. It can be a deepening of faith, and it is a wonderful three-day weekend of prayer and reflection, and so everyone who is there listens to a lot of presentations by fellow lay people. The clergy on the weekend, there are separate liturgies for Catholics and the other Christians. And so it's a wonderful weekend of deepening faith and some maybe rediscovering faith that continues to be a very positive program for the Diocese of Columbus. So it's had a long history. And Columbus modified our Cum Christo to be have a component for non-Catholic spouses that they could be a part of the weekend and have a separate liturgy on the weekend. And so it really is in this kind of ecumenical Columbus area or diocesan area, we have offered it to everyone.
Beautiful. And give us about a minute rundown of what Back in His Arms Again ministry is.
Back in His Arms Again is a reaching out to families who have lost a child whose life is ended by miscarriage and ordinarily there's not much leading up to a sudden awareness that this child's life has ended before birth. And so there's a lot of reaching out to parents of various ages, usually younger ages, in a very sudden, almost shocking time of their life that they never expected that this child of theirs, that they have a nursery ready and plans and hopes and dreams for this person, that their life has changed. And so we are there to be present to them, to offer a lot of suggestions. And you can't be a counselor over the phone, so we offer them a lot of direction in terms of arrangements to their local clergy, and helping them not only for the immediacy, but for help in the future as well.
And we're going to have you on, talk more about that ministry. It sounds very, very important. So Father Blubaugh, thank you. I know you fill in for other priests as well, always on the go. Please, if you would leave us with your blessing.
Okay. Gracious, mighty God, watch over all wonderful people you have created. Help us remember those who have gone before us. But Lord, bless those who share in deep and wonderful ways a gift of faith and baptism, that we may serve you as we have tried to serve you by our lives. In the name of the Father, and the Son, of the Holy Spirit.
Amen. Amen. Thank you again, Father Homer Blubaugh. I'm Elizabeth Ficicelli. Join us again Tuesdays and Sundays, 12:30, for another edition of Answering the Call. Have a wonderful week, and God bless you.
Answering the Call is a production of listener-supported St. Gabriel Catholic Radio, AM 820. Archives of Answering the Call with Elizabeth Ficicelli are available at stgabrielradio.com.
Veni, Sancti.